Side 11.
Chapter 13. The Reich case was ready for final submission to the district attorney's office. Powell hoped it was also ready for that cold-blooded, cynical monster of facts and evidence, old man Mosey. Powell and his staff assembled in Mosey's office. A round table had been set up in the centre, and on it was constructed a transparent model of the key rooms of Beaumont House, inhabited by miniature android models of the Dramatis Personae. The lab's model division had done a superlative job, and actually had characterised the leading players. The tiny Reich, Tate, Beaumont and others moved with the characteristic gaits of their originals. Alongside the table was amassed the documentation the staff had prepared, ready for presentation to the machine. Old man Mosey himself occupied the entire circular wall of the giant office. His multitudinous eyes winked and glared coldly. His multitudinous memories whirred and hummed. His mouth, the cone of a speaker, hung open in a kind of astonishment at human stupidity. His hands, the keys of a multiflex typewriter, poised over a roll of tape, ready to hammer out logic. Mosey was the mosaic multiplex prosecution computer of the district attorney's office, whose awful decisions controlled the preparation, presentation, and prosecution of every police case. "We won't bother Mosey to start with," Powell told the DA. "Let's take a look at the models and check them against the crime schedule. Your staff has the timesheets. Just watch them while the dolls go through the motions. If you catch anything our gang's missed, make a note and we'll kick it around." He nodded to DeSantis, the harassed lab chief, who inquired in an overwrought voice, "1-1? "That's a little fast. Make it 1-2. Half slow motion." "The androids look unreal at that tempo," DeSantis snarled. "Can't do them justice. We slaved for 2 weeks, and I never mind. We'll admire them later." DeSantis verged on mutiny, then touched a button. Instantly, the model was illumined, and the dolls came to life. Acoustics had faked a background. There was a hint of music, laughter, and chatter. In the main hall of Beaumont House, a pneumatic model of Maria Beaumont slowly climbed to a dais, with a tiny book in her hands. "The time is 11:09 at that point," Powell said to the DA's staff. "Watch the clock above the model. It's geared to synchronize with the slow motion." In rapt silence, the legal division studied the scene and jotted notes while the androids reproduced the actions of the fatal Beaumont party. Once again, Maria Beaumont read the rules of the sardine game from the dais in the main hall of Beaumont House. The lights dimmed and went out. Ben Reich slowly threaded his way through the main hall to the music room, turned right, mounted the stairs to the picture gallery, passed through the bronze doors leading to the orchid suite. Blinded and stunned the Beaumont guards, and then entered the suite. And again Reich met de Courtney face to face, closed with him, drew a deadly knife pistol from his pocket, and with the blade pried de Courtney's mouth open, while the old man hung weak and unresisting. And again a door of the orchid suite burst open, to reveal Barbara de Courtney in a frost-white, transparent dressing gown. And she and Reich fainted and dodged until Reich suddenly blew the back of de Courtney's head out with a shot through the mouth. "Got that material from the de Courtney girl," Powell murmured. "Peeped her. It's authentic." Barbara de Courtney crawled to the body of her father, seized the gun, and suddenly dashed out of the orchid suite, followed by Reich. He pursued her down into the darkened house and lost her as she darted out through the front door into the street. Then Reich met Tate, and they marched to the projection room, pretending to play Sardine. The drama came to an end at last, with the stampede of the guests up to the orchid suite, where the dolls burst in and crowded around the tiny dead body. There they froze in a grotesque little tableau. There was a long pause while the legal staff digested the drama.
All right, Powell said. That's the picture. Now, let's feed the data to Mose for an opinion. First, opportunity. You won't deny that the sardine game provided Reich with perfect opportunity.
How'd Reich know they were going to play sardine? The DA muttered.
Reich bought the book and sent it to Maria Beaumont. He provided his own sardine game.
How do you know she'd play the game?
He knew she liked games. Sardine was the only legible game in the book.
I don't know.
The DA scratched his head.
Mosey takes a lot of convincing. Feed it to him won't do any harm.
The office door banged open, and Commissioner Crabb marched in as though heading a parade.
Mr. Prefect Powell,
Crabb pronounced formally.
Mr. Commissioner?
It has come to my attention, sir, that you are perverting that mechanical brain for the purpose of implicating my good friend Ben Reich in the foul and dastardly murder of Crady Courtney.
Mr. Powell, such a purpose is grotesque. Ben Reich is an honorable and leading citizen of our country. Furthermore, sir, I have never approved of that mechanical brain. You were chosen by the electorate to exercise your intellectual powers, not bow in slavery to that.
Powell nodded to Beck, who began feeding the punched data into Mose's ear.
You're absolutely right, Commissioner. Now, about the method. First, how'd Reich knock out the guard? DeSantis?
And furthermore, gentlemen,
Crabb continued,
Rhodopsin ionizer,
DeSantis spat. He picked up a plastic sphere and tossed it to Powell, who exhibited it. A man named Jordan developed it for Reich's private police. I've got the empiric processing formula ready for the computer and the sample we mocked up. Anybody care to try it? The DA looked dubious.
I don't see the use. Mose can make up his own mind about that.
In addition to which, gentlemen,
Crabb summarized.
Oh, come on, DeSantis said with unpleasant cheerfulness. You'll never believe it unless you see it for yourself. It doesn't hurt. Just makes you non-compos for 6 or 7.
The plastic bulb shattered in Powell's fingers. A vivid blue light flared under Crabb's nose. Caught in mid-oration, the commissioner collapsed like an empty sack. Powell looked around in horror.
Good heavens, he exclaimed. What have I done? That bulb simply melted in my fingers.
He looked at DeSantis and spoke severely.
You made the covering too thin, DeSantis. Now see what you've done to Commissioner Crabb.
What I've done?
Feed that data to Mose, the DA said in a voice rigid with control. This I know he'll buy.
They made the commissioner's body comfortable in a deep chair.
Now the murder method, Powell continued. Kindly watch this, gentlemen. The hand is quicker than the eye.
He exhibited a revolver from the police museum. From the chambers he removed the shells. And from one of the shells he extracted the bullet.
This is what Reich did to the gun Jerry Church gave him before the murder. Pretended to make it safe. A phony alibi.
Phony hell, that gun is safe,
Is that Churchy's evidence?
It is. Look at your sheet.
Then you don't have to bother Mose with the problem. The DA threw his papers down in disgust. We haven't got a case.
Yes, we have.
How can a cartridge kill without a bullet? Your sheet doesn't say anything about Reich reloading.
He reloaded.
He did not, DeSantis spat. There was no projectile in the wound or the room. There was nothing.
There was everything. It was easy once I figured the clue.
There was no clue, DeSantis shouted.
Why, you located it, DeSantis. That bit of candy gel in De Courtney's mouth, remember? And no candy in the stomach?
DeSantis glared. Powell grinned. He took an eyedropper and filled a gel capsule with water. He pressed it into the open end of the cartridge above the charge and placed the cartridge in the gun. He raised the gun, aimed at a small wooden block on the edge of the model table, and pulled the trigger. There was a dull, flat explosion, and the block leaped into fragments.
For the love of... That was a trick,
the DA exclaimed.
There was something in that shell besides water.
He examined the fragments of wood.
No, there was not. You can shoot an ounce of water with a powder charge. You can shoot it with enough muzzle velocity to blow out the back of a head if you shoot through the soft roof of the mouth. That's why Reich had to shoot through the mouth. That's why DeSantis found the bit of gel. That's why he found nothing else. The projectile was gone.
Give it to Mose, the DA said faintly. By God, Powell, I'm beginning to think we've got a case.
All right. Now, motive. We picked up Reich's business records, and accounting's gone through them. De Courtney had Reich with his back to the wall. With Reich, it was if you can't lick him, join him. He tried to join De Courtney. He failed. He murdered De Courtney. Will you buy that?
Sure, I'll buy it. But will old man Mose? Feed it in, let's see.
They fed in the last of the punch data, warmed the computer up from idle to run, and kicked him into it. Mose's eyes blinked in hard meditation. His stomach rumbled softly. His memories began to hiss and stutter. Powell and the others waited with mounting suspense. Abruptly, Mose hiccuped. A soft bell began to ping, 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 and Mose's type began to flail the virgin tape under it. If it please the court, Mose said, with pleadering of non-vaults and demurrers, signatures, SS leading case Hay versus Cohos, and the rule in Shelley's case, URP.
What the... Powell looked at Beck. You get kittenish, Beck explained. At a time like this, happens now and then. We'll try him again.
They filled the computer's ear again, held the warm-up for a good 5 minutes, and then kicked him into it. Once again his eyes blinked, his stomach growled, his memories hissed, and Powell and the two staffs waited anxiously. A month's hard work hung on this decision. The type hammers began to fall. Brief, 921-088... Section C1, motive, Mose said. Passion motive for crime insufficiently documented. CF State versus Hanrahan, 1202, Superior Court 19, and subsequent line of leading cases.
Passion motive? Powell muttered. Is Mose crazy? It's a profit motive. Check C1, Beck.
Beck checked. No mistake there.
Try him again.
They ran the computer through a third time. This time he spoke to the point.
Brief 921088, Section C1, Motive. Profit motive for crime insufficiently documented, C.F. State versus Royal 1197, Superior Court, 8-3.
Didn't you punch C1 properly? Powell inquired.
We got everything in we could, Beck replied.
Excuse me, Powell said to the others. I've got to peep this out with Beck. You don't mind, I hope.
He turned to Beck.
Open up, Jackson. I smelled an evasion in them last words. Let me have it.
Honest, Link, I'm not aware of any. If you were aware, it wouldn't be an evasion. It'd be a downright lie. Now, let me see.
Oh, of course. Idiot.
You don't have to be ashamed because code's a little slow.
Powell spoke aloud to the staffs. Beck's missing one small datum point. Code's still working with Hassop upstairs trying to bust Reich's private code. So far, all we've got is the knowledge that Reich offered merger and was refused. We haven't got the definite offer and refusal yet. That's what Mose wants.
A cautious monster.
If you didn't bust the code, how do you know the offer was made and refused? The DA asked.
Got that from Reich himself through Gus Tate. It was one of the last things Tate gave me before he was murdered.
I tell you what, Beck, add an assumption to the tape.
Assuming that our merger evidence is unassailable, which it is, what does Mose think of the case?
Beck hand-punched a strip, spliced it to the main problem, and fed it in again. By now well warmed up, the Mosaic multiplex computer answered in 30 seconds. Brief 921088, accepting assumption, probability of successful prosecution, 97.0099%.
Powell's staff grinned and relaxed.
Powell tore the tape out of the typewriter and presented it to the DA with a flourish.
And there's your case, Mr. District Attorney, sewn up and delivered.
By God, the DA said. 97%! Jesus, we haven't had one in the 90 bracket all my term. I thought I was lucky when I broke 70. 97% against Ben Reich himself? Jesus!
He looked around at his staff in a kind of wild surmise.
We'll make goddamn history!
The office door opened, and two perspiring men darted in, waving manuscript.
Here's the code now, Powell said. You bust it?
We busted it, they said. And now you're busted, Powell. The whole case is busted.
What? What the hell are you talking about?
Reich knocked off de Courtney because de Courtney wouldn't merge, didn't he? He had a nice big fat profit motive for killing de Courtney, didn't he? In a pig's eye, he did.
Oh, God, Beck groaned.
Reich sent YYJITTED, RRCB, UUFEALKQQBA to de Courtney. That read, suggest merger both our interests, equal partnership.
Damn it, that's what I said all along. And de Courtney replied, WWHG, that was a refusal. Reich told Tate, Tate told me.
De Courtney answered, WWHG. That reads, accept offer.
The hell it does.
The hell it don't. WWHG, accept offer. It was the answer Reich wanted. It was the answer that gave Reich every reason for keeping de Courtney alive. You will never convince any court in the solar system that Reich had a motive for murdering de Courtney. Your case is washed out.
Powell stood stock still for half a minute, his fists clenched, his face working. Suddenly he turned on the model, reached in and pulled out the android figure of Reich. He twisted its head off. He went to Mose, yanked out the tapes of punched data, crumpled them into a wad, and hurled the wad across the room. He strode to Crabb's recumbent figure
and launched a tremendous kick at the seat of the chair. While the staffs watched in an appalled silence, the chair and the commissioner overturned to the floor.
"God damn you! You're always sitting in that goddamn chair!"
Powell cried in a shaking voice and stormed out of the office. Chapter 14.
Explosion. Concussion. The cell doors burst open. And far outside, freedom is waiting in the cloak of darkness and flight into the unknown. Who's that? Who's outside the cell block? Oh, God. Oh, Christ, the man with no face. Looking, looming, silent. Run. Escape. Fly. Fly.
Fly through space. There's safety in the solitude of this silver-lined launch jetting to the deeps of the distant unknown. The hatch door. Opening. But it can't. There's no one on this launch to swing it slowly, ominously. Oh, God, the man with no face, looking, looming. Silent.
But I'm innocent, Your Honor, innocent. You'll never prove my guilt, and I'll never stop pleading my case, though you pound your gavel till you deafen my ears. And, oh, Christ, on the bench, in wig and gown, the man with no face, looking, looming, quintessence of vengeance.
The pounding gavel dissolved to knuckles on the stateroom door. The steward's voice called,
"Over New York, Mr. Reich. 1 hour to debarkation. Over New York, Mr. Reich."
The knuckles went on hammering on the door. Reich found his voice.
"All right," he croaked. "I hear you."
The steward departed. Reich climbed out of the liquid bed and found his legs giving way. He clutched at the wall and cursed himself upright. Still in the grip of the nightmare's terror, he went into the bathroom. Depilated, showered, steamed, and air-washed for 10 minutes, he was still reeling. He stepped into the massage alcove and punched glow salt. 2 pounds of moistened, scented salt were sprayed on his skin. As the massage buffers were about to begin, Reich suddenly decided he needed coffee. He stepped out of the alcove to ring service. There was a dull concussion, and Reich was hurled to his face by the force of the explosion in the alcove. His back was slashed by flying particles. He darted into the bedroom, seized his traveling case, and turned like an animal at bay, his hands automatically opening the case and groping for the cartridge of detonation bulbs he always carried. There was no cartridge in the case. Reich pulled himself together. He was aware of the bite of salt in the cuts in his back and the streaming blood. He was aware that he was no longer trembling. He went back into the bathroom, shut off the massage buffers, and inspected the alcove wreckage. Someone had removed the cartridge from his case during the night and planted a bulb in each of the massage buffers. The empty cartridge lay behind the alcove. Only a split-second miracle had saved his life.
From whom?
He inspected his stateroom door. The lock had evidently been gaffed by a past master. It showed no sign of tampering.
But who? Why?
Son of a bitch,
Reich growled. With iron nerve, he returned to the bathroom, washed off the salt and blood, and sprayed his back with coagulate. He dressed, had coffee, and descended to the staging hall, where, after a savage skirmish with the Peeper customs man,
"Tension, apprehension, and ascension have begun,"
he boarded the Monarch launch that was waiting to take him down to the city. From the launch, he called Monarch Tower. His secretary's face appeared on the screen.
"Any news of Hassop?"
Reich asked. "No, Mr. Reich,
Not since you called from Spaceland.
Give me recreation.
The screen herringboned, and then disclosed the chrome lounge of Monarch. West, bearded and scholarly, was carefully binding sheets of typescript into plastic volumes. He looked up and grinned.
Hello, Ben.
Don't look so cheerful, Ellery,
Reich growled.
Where the hell's Hassop? I thought you'd, surely.
Not my problem anymore, Ben.
What are you talking about?
West displayed the volumes.
Just finishing up my work. History of my career with Monarch Utilities and Resources for your files. Said career ended this morning at 9 o'clock.
What?
Yep, I warned you, Ben. The guilds just ruled Monarch out of bounds for me. Company espionage is unethical.
Listen, Ellery, you can't quit now. I'm on a hook, and I need you bad. Someone tried to booby-trap me on the ship this morning. I beat it by an eyelash. I've got to find out who it is. I need a peeper.
Sorry, Ben.
You don't have to work for Monarch. I'll put you under personal contract for private service. The same contract Breen has.
Breen, a second? The analyst?
Yes, my analyst.
Not anymore.
What?
West nodded. The ruling came down today. No more exclusive practice. It limits the service of peepers. We've got to be dedicated to the most good for the most people. You've lost Breen.
It's Powell,
Reich shouted.
Using every dirty peeper trick he can dig out of the slime to bitch me. He's trying to nail me to the Courtney Cross, the sneaking peeper he...
Sign off, Ben. Powell had nothing to do with it. Let's break off friendly, eh? We've always kept it pleasant. Let's break it pleasant. What do you say?
I say go to hell,
Reich roared and cut the connection. To the launch pilot, he said in the same tone,
take me home.
Reich burst into his penthouse apartment, once again awakening the hearts of his staff to terror and hatred. He hurled his traveling case at his valet and went immediately to Breen's suite. It was empty. A crisp note on the desk repeated the information West had already given him. Reich strode to his own rooms, went to the phone and dialed Gus Tate. The screen cleared and displayed a sign. Service permanently discontinued. Reich stared, broke the connection and dialed Jerry Church. The screen cleared and displayed a sign. Service permanently discontinued. Reich snapped the contact key up, paced around the study uncertainly, then went to the shimmer of light in the corner that was his safe. He switched the safe into temporal phase, revealing the honeycomb paper rack, and reached for the small red envelope in the upper left-hand pigeonhole. As he touched the envelope, he heard the faint click. He doubled up and spun away, his face buried in his arms. There was a blinding flash of light and a heavy explosion. Something brutal punched Reich in the left side, hurled him across the study and slammed him against the wall. Then a hail of debris followed. He struggled to his feet, bellowing in bewilderment and fury, stripping the ripped clothing from his left side to examine the state of his body. He was badly slashed, and a particularly excruciating pain indicated at least one broken rib. He heard his staff come running down the corridor and roared,
"Keep out! You hear me? Keep out, all of you!"
He stumbled through the wreckage and began sorting over the remains of his safe. He found the neuron scrambler he had taken from Chukafrood's red-eyed woman. He found the malignant steel flower that was the knife pistol that killed de Courtney. It still contained 4 unfired shells loaded with water and sealed with gel. He thrust both into the pocket of a new jacket, got a fresh cartridge of detonation bulbs from his desk and tore out of the room, ignoring the servants, who stared at him in astonishment. Reich swore feverishly all the way down from the tower apartment to the cellar garage, where he deposited his private jumper key in the call slot and waited for the little car. When it came out of storage with the key in the door, another tenant was approaching, and even at a distance was staring. Reich turned the key and yanked open the door to jump in. There was a low-pressure rip. Reich hurled himself to the ground. The jumper tank exploded. By some freak it failed to burst into flame. It erupted a shattering geyser of raw fuel and fragments of twisted metal. Reich crawled frantically, reached the exit ramp, and ran for his life. On the street level, torn, bleeding, rank with creosote fuel, he searched frantically for a public jumper. He couldn't find a coin jumper, but managed to flag a piloted machine.
"Where to?"
the driver asked. Reich dabbed dazedly at the blood and oil that smeared him.
"Chukka Frood,"
he croaked in a hysterical voice. The cab hopped him to 99 Bastion West. Reich thrust past the protesting doorman, the indignant reception clerk, and Chukka Frood's highly paid chargé d'affaires to the private office, a Victorian room furnished with stained glass lamps, overstuffed sofas, and a roll-top desk. Chuka was seated at the desk, wearing a dingy smock and a dingy expression that changed to alarm when Reich yanked the scrambler out of his pocket.
"For God's sake, Reich," she exclaimed.
"Here I am, Chuka," he said hoarsely. "So let's have the trial run before we feed it to the dice. I used this scrambler on you once before. I'm warmed up for it again." "You warmed me up, Chuka."
She shot up from the desk and screamed, "Magda!" Reich caught her by the arm and hurled her across the office. She side-swiped the couch and fell across it. The red-eyed bodyguard came running into the office. Reich was ready for her. He clubbed her across the back of the neck, and as she fell forward, he ground his heel into her back and slammed her flat on the floor. The woman twisted and clawed at his leg. Ignoring her, he spat at Chuka.
"Let's get it squared off. Why the booby traps?"
"What are you talking about?" Chuka cried.
"What the hell do I look like I'm talking about? Read the blood, lady. I've skinned out of 3 obituaries running. How long can my luck hold out?"
"Makes sense, Reich. I can't..."
"I'm talking about the big D, Chuka. D for death. I came in here and strong-armed the De Courtney girl out of you. I beat hell out of your girlfriend, and I beat hell out of you. So you got frabbed off and set those traps, right?"
Chuka shook her head dazedly.
3 of them so far. On the ship, coming back from Spaceland, in my study, in my jumper. How many more, Chuka?"
"It wasn't me, Reich, so help me."
"It has to be you, Chuka. You're the only one with a gripe, and the only one who hires gimsters. That adds up to you. So let's get it squared off."
He slapped the safety off the scrambler.
"I got no time for a 2-bit hater with coffin queer friends."
"For God's sake," Chuka screamed. "What the hell have I got against you? So you rough-housed a little. So you mugged Magda. You wasn't the first. You ain't going to be the last. Use your head."
"I used it. If it isn't you, who else?"
"Kino Grizzard. He hires gimsters, too. I heard you and him."
"Gizzard's out. Gizzard's dead. Who else?"
"Church."
"He hasn't got the guts. If he had, he'd have tried it 10 years ago. Who else?"
"How do I know? There's hundreds hate you enough."
"There's thousands. But who could get into my safe? Who could break a phase combination in?"
"Maybe nobody broke into your safe. Maybe somebody broke into your head and peeped the combination. Maybe..."
"Peeped?"
"Yeah, peeped. Maybe you added church up wrong, or some other people who's got an eager reason for filling your coffin."
"My God," Reich whispered. "Oh, my God. Yes.
Church?"
No, Powell.
The cop?
The cop, Powell, yes. Mr. Holy Lincoln Powell. Yes.
The words began pouring out of Reich in a torrent.
Yes, Powell. The son of a bitch is fighting dirty because I've licked him clean. He can't get a case together. He's got nothing but booby-trapping left.
You're crazy, Reich.
Am I? Why the hell did he take Ellery West away from me and Breen? He knows the only defense I've got against a booby-trap is a peeper. It's Powell.
But a cop, Reich? A cop?
Sure, a cop,
Reich shouted.
Why not a cop? He's safe. Who'd suspect him? It's smart. It's what I do myself. All right. Now I'm gonna booby-trap him.
He kicked the red-eyed woman from him, went to Chuka and yanked her to her feet.
Call Powell.
What?
Call Powell, he yelled. Lincoln Powell. Call him at his house. Tell him to come down here right away.
No, Reich,
he shook her.
Listen to me, Frabhead. Bastion West is owned by the de Courtney cartel. Now that old de Courtney's dead, I'm going to own the cartel, which means I'll own Bastion. I'll own this house. I'll own you, Chuka. You want to stay in business? Call Powell.
She stared at his vivid face, feebly peeping him, slowly realizing that what he said was true.
But I got no excuse, Reich.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute,
Reich thought, then yanked the knife pistol from his pocket and shoved it into Chuka's hands.
Show him this. Tell him the de Courtney girl left it here.
What is it?
The gun that killed de Courtney.
For the love of... Reich?
Reich laughed.
It won't do him any good. By the time he's got it, he'll be booby-trapped. Call him. Show him the gun. Get him down here.
He thrust Chuka towards the firm, followed her and stood alongside the screen, out of line of sight. He hefted the scrambler in his hand meaningfully. Chuka understood. She dialed Powell's number. Mary Noyes appeared on the screen, listened to Chuka, then called Powell. The prefect appeared, his lean face haggard, his dark eyes heavily shadowed.
I got something you might want, maybe, Mr. Powell, Chuka stammered. I just found it. That girl you took out of my house, she left it behind.
Left what, Chuka?
The gun that killed her father.
No.
Powell's face was suddenly animated.
Let's see it.
Chuka displayed the knife pistol.
That's it, by heaven, Powell exclaimed. Maybe I'm going to get a break after all. Stay right where you are, Chuka. I'll be down as fast as a jumper can jet.
The screen blacked out. Reich ground his teeth and tasted blood. He turned, dashed out of the Rainbow House and located a vacant coin jumper. He dropped a half credit into the lock, opened the door and lurched in. As he took off with a hissing roar, he clattered against a 30th story cornice and nearly capsized. He realized dazedly that he was in no condition to pilot a jumper or set a booby trap.
Don't try to think, he thought. Don't try to plan. Leave it to your instincts. You're a killer. A natural killer. Just wait and kill.
Reich fought himself on the controls all the way to Hudson Ramp, and he fought the jumper down through the crazy, shifting North River winds. The killer instinct prompted him to crash land in Powell's back garden. He didn't know why. As he pounded the twisted cabin door open, a canned voice spoke.
Your attention, please. You are liable for any damage to this vehicle. Please leave your name and address. If we are forced to trace you, you will be liable for the costs. Thank you.
I'm going to be liable for a lot more damage,
Reich growled.
You're welcome.
He plunged under a heavy clump of forsythia and waited with the scrambler ready. Then he understood why he had crashed. The girl who answered Powell's phone came out of the house and ran down through the garden towards the jumper. Reich waited. No one else came from the house. The girl was alone. He surged up out of the brush, and the girl spun around before she heard him. A peeper. He pulled the trigger to first notch. She stiffened and trembled, helpless. At that moment, when he was about to pull the trigger all the way back to the big D, instinct stopped him again. Suddenly the booby trap for Powell came to him. Kill the girl inside the house, seed her body with detonation bulbs, and leave that bait for Powell. Sweat broke out on the girl's swarthy face. The muscles in her jaw twitched. Reich took her by the arm and led her up the garden to the house. She walked with the stiff-legged gait of a scarecrow. Inside the house, Reich led the girl through the kitchen to the living room. He found a long, corded, modern lounger and thrust the girl down on it. She was fighting him with everything short of her body. He grinned savagely, bent down and kissed her full on the mouth.
"My love to Powell," he said,
and stepped back, raising the scrambler. Then he lowered it. Someone was watching him. He turned almost casually and darted a quick look around the living room. There was no one. He turned back to the girl and asked,
"Are you doing that with T.P. Peeper?"
Then he raised the scrambler. Again he lowered it. Someone was watching him. This time Reich prowled around the living room, searching behind chairs inside closets. There was no one. He checked the kitchen and the bath. No one. He returned to the living room and made a noise, then thought of the upper floor. He went to the stairs, started to mount them, and then stopped in mid-stride as though he'd been poleaxed. Someone was watching him.
That's the end of this side.